state his views, Lamar state his views on police brutality with that line in the song, quote, "And we hate the popo, want to kill us in the street, faux show."
Ah, please. Ugh, I don't like it.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. That's rapper Kendrick Lamar's hit song DNA from his latest Grammy-winning album, Damn. A Grammy is one thing. It's a big thing. But the Pulitzer Prize for Music is altogether something much, much bigger. Kendrick Lamar is the first non-jazz or classical artist to be awarded that prize as well. The Pulitzer Award is a sign of the times and a testament to the genre's growing influence. Professor Treva Lindsay teaches African-American women's history and also specializes in hip-hop studies at Ohio State. She joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And also promoter, co-founder, and organizer of the 2x2 Hip-Hop Festival in Columbus, Josh Miller. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And a national songwriter, visual artist, activist, and children's author, Vada Hazim. Welcome to the show.
How you doing? Thank you.
Good. Vada, let's start with you as a creator. Tell us the definition of rap and hip-hop for the uninitiated who might be listening right now and ask, well, what does it even mean?
So you mean just hip-hop in general?
Is the genre,
the
right.
Well, hip-hop in general, I think at this point it's reached the place where it's so complex because I think as generations and years and everything passes, so much is added to it and sometimes even taken away from it. But, you know, hip-hop was created obviously for expression. Just like all origin stories, you know, it depends on who you ask.
It's a little murky back there
exactly,
at the beginning.
Right. But I think as a general consensus, we all say it began in New York, in the Bronx. And during that time, it was a lot of, you know, violence. It was a lot of drug use, a lot of poverty. And what happened is in the midst of all of that, groups of people decided, okay, instead of, you know, feuding with each other with violence and with aggression, let's try to figure out a different way to settle these, you know, quarrels that we have with each other. And that was the birth of it. And, you know, battling in a positive way, that was the beginning and the creation of hip hop. And so, you know, you'll have one rival, you know, quote unquote gang or crew, and they had a problem with someone from another neighborhood. You know, before that, what would happen is they would physically fight. You know, people would get hurt. You know, some people would, you know, die. And instead of doing that, they got crews, and they would have dance offs, right? And they would battle and dance against each other. And then that's how they would settle the feud. Same thing with the MC, that they would battle and, you know, use words and poetry to combat each other in a positive way.
What do you mean by MC?
MC means master of ceremonies.
Yeah.
But in hip hop, they changed the wording of it, and it's spelled E-M-C-E-E. And that was a person, you know, originally who assisted the DJ, actually. So in the beginning, the DJ who, you know, the disc jockey, the one who would play the music and move the crowd and move and have people dancing, they were the star.
Yeah.
First, right? And the MC was the sidekick, and they would just assist the DJ and help him, you know, kind of be his hype man.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then, like I said before, things started to evolve and the culture started to evolve. And it depending on what point in time that you look into hip hop, you know, the rapper or the MC is in the forefront. You look at another era, the DJ is in the forefront. You look at another era, b-boying and dancing, that was in the forefront. So it depends on, you know, what era you look at, which I think is beautiful.
Yeah.
That it changes and it evolves. And so, for me, that's what hip hop has always been for me. Again, you ask someone from in a different age group, it means something totally different to them, which some people would say have a problem with that. But I don't. I think it's beautiful. I think it's the same reason why, you know, people are having a LeBron James, Michael Jordan conversation. You know, it depends on who you ask, and which I think that's healthy. You know, I don't think that that's a problem.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. You just heard from Vada Azeem. He's a national songwriter, visual artist, activist. He's grew up in Columbus, based in Columbus now. Also with us, Dr. Treva Lindsay. She's a professor of African-American women's history at Ohio State, where she also specializes in the history of the hip-hop culture. Also with us is Josh Miller. He's a promoter and co-founder and organizer of Two by Two Hip Hop Festival in Columbus. If you want to join the conversation, we're talking about how this genre of life in the United States and music has been woven into the tapestry to the extent that we now have, for the first time, someone who has produced a song in the genre winning a Pulitzer Prize. It's kind of sort of that iconic tipping point for a lot of people. That's why we're talking about this now. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Treva Lindsay, not surprisingly, Vada has a lyrical way of putting it, the history together kind of cutting it up and putting it back together for us. What about you? When you teach it, what do you say?
Well, I definitely start with the moment in which hip hop emerges of what we know it to be.
There's a moment?
There's a moment, okay. I think. And I think that moment is really coming, this kind of post-civil rights era moment. You have the defunding of a lot of different things, schools, public housing. You also have a movement, a group of people from both Puerto Rico and the West Indies, which will ultimately impact the sound and the right. technology of hip hop. You have the kind of disintegration of public transportation in somewhere like New York. And this is mirrored in cities all over the country. But that particular combination of New York being a space where so many cultures are colliding, so many people are colliding, poverty is increasing, racial tensions are reemerging, a kind of backlash to the civil rights movement. And so you have things like graffiti that pop up, one of the first and kind of foundational elements of hip hop culture, this visual aspect of it to be seen. So you'd see it all over the city, and it was seen as a menace or a nuisance or something that destroyed public property. But in fact, these artists were attempting to be seen, be visual, have their art travel throughout the city and be in places where their bodies physically couldn't, where they were policed, where they were monitored and surveilled in particular kinds of ways. You see the emergence of b-boying, b-girling, breakdancing, and other forms of movement that show all kinds of bringing in of different forms of dance to really tell a story through the body with these bodies that have been marginalized. And at this point, beginning what we know of as mass incarceration. And so being able to be free in the body, to use the body to battle, not to be used as a site of violence or a site of marginalization is really important. The DJ, you got to have a party. You got to have something to have joy.
Everybody wants to have fun.
Everybody wants to have fun, even marginalized folks. And I think it's so important to think about the party aspect of hip hop. I know a lot of the critiques now that come in of hip hop are often critiquing, man, it's not saying anything. It's not really reaching people. Well, sometimes joy is part of that political project. And I think it's important to say that hip hop has always been a space where joy is present and where people can express that and talk about particular issues, use sound to push forward how we think about sound, that we arrive now at a point where the storytelling, whether it's visual, sonic, or body, are now recognized at this high level. We didn't need the recognition. We knew it was genius. But it's important to see that different institutions are recognizing the kind of lyrical and storytelling power of hip hop.
It's so the genius ultimately is in the originality of it. And it's
yes.
not probably to you a coincidence. The two of the most the most original American musical genres both emanate from the African-American community.
Absolutely. I think it's
jazz and, of course, hip hop.
Jazz and, of course, hip hop. And depending on who you're asking, rock and roll.
Yeah. Yeah.
If
absolutely.
We think about
which
that.
Yes.
Right. And the blues. So you think about a lot of American musical traditions that come out of these communities and come out of communities where they're responding to and living right? Responding to the conditions of a racist country, responding the conditions of poverty, responding the conditions of kind of defunding that happens across the board in public institutions. And then you see them almost create something out of nothing, creating new kinds of sound. If you defund our music programs, we'll find other ways to create sound.
If you take away my drums, I'll find a can.
I'll find a can. And you'll see that. And so it's an almost unstoppable force of creativity. And hip hop is one of the kind of the 20th century's last big iteration of that kind of communal energy, that kind of artistic and expressive energy. And I think it's important in 2018 that we're recognizing just how impactful that is, not just in terms of the market and that it sells a lot, but the kinds of stories that it puts forward, the kind of energy that it brings forward. And it recognizes the communities from which this music and this culture evolves.
When it comes to organizing a festival, Josh Miller, what are the challenges in making sure that the variety and the there's so many layers, there's so much depth, and it's so broad now, it is represented.
Yeah. I mean, I think our thing from a festival standpoint, from trying to bring all of those elements into one place, the hardest thing is just making sure that all of the elements are well represented. You know what I mean? So many people nowadays, even though a lot of what people's ideas of original hip hop from the 70s in New York and stuff was, the B-boys, the B-girls, the DJs and all that. Nowadays, you don't see a whole lot of all of those elements. You see DJs at the club, you see MCs, getting Pulitzer prizes and things like that. but a lot of the stuff when it comes to the graffiti and the breaking side, it's not out there all the time, right? It's not mainstream in the fact that, it's well accepted everywhere. So, now it's been kind of this crazy thing of getting my family involved into all of those elements. My son's 9 years old and he's in a B-boy crew. So, so we travel all over the country now to do that. But that was something that I had never seen before up until the last 4 or 5 years until I actually really started getting into it and seeing those kind of, scenes within the scene, so I think our thing is really just trying to make sure that everything is well represented, everything is there, and that everybody sees and can experience those elements for the incredible things that they are and that they bring to just life and in our society today.
I can't remember if it was Vada Azim or Treva Lindsay who said something about taking away from it too. There's the putting into it and the giving, and then there's others that take away from it. Was it you, Vada?
Yeah.
What did you mean by that?
Well,
is it the appropriation of it is what you were talking about?
Of course. Yeah. So when and just like what Josh said, to make sure, and he does an amazing job, by the way. I don't know if you've never been to 2x2 Festival, please, the next one that comes up, try
it's
to check it out.
It's coming up on July 28th.
July 28th. Yep. If you're in Columbus, make sure you check it out. It's a great time. But what he said about all aspects being represented, one thing that I always want to tell people is that every element of hip hop is alive and well. People are doing it. People are b-boying and doing visual art and graffiti all over the world still today. It's still going on. Now, it's not commercial. It's not as commercial as a DJ or an MC, but those things are still happening.
And I would imagine there's always a lag time when it comes to the visual arts. Its time will come.
Well, I would say to that, actually, strangely enough, graffiti was one of the first ones that actually had this mainstream moment that happens in the 80s. You have art shows in France in the 80s that are featuring very popular graffiti artists in the United States. I think in general, we have a different relationship to visual art and visual culture than we do to something like you can hear in pop culture in a certain way. And because graffiti is also a place-based thing. But you see graffiti in now mural projects across cities in the United States. They're commissioned. Now, we can talk about what that may mean and the kind of co-optation of an art form. But Facebook's office was covered, and one of very well-known graffiti artists did all of the art in there. So I think it's how we decide what is mainstream, what is commercial, what are the terms that we decide that we see that.
Right.
And across the world, I've never gone anywhere and not heard, seen, and felt hip-hop. Nowhere ever.
And I'll give you an example. And what I say, and when I say take away, I mean in certain spaces.
Gotcha.
Right? Because, you know, like what Josh said, you'll go to the club. Let's say if you go, you know, to a nightlife club, like you said, you see the DJs. And, you know, even sometimes they might have someone hosting on the microphone or what have you. But and you might not see B-boys in some of those places. But trust me, if someone starts breaking in one of those places, people are going to have a good time and people are going to root that person on.
Mm-hmm.
No, it doesn't matter where you are. You know, I've never been somewhere and seen someone start breaking and everyone
and
not stop.
Right.
Everyone not stop exactly
break?
What they're doing and yep. pay attention to what that person is doing. So that's what I mean by it. It's alive and well. Like it. And I don't like when people get caught up on, you know, well, what's on commercials and what's on bill? Because mm-hmm. like, you know, like Dr. said, it's I call her doctor now. It's not. It depends on where you're looking,
mm-hmm.
right? When it comes to, you know, notoriety, I guess. Which, right.
We're talking about culture and hip-hop today. You just heard from Vada Azeem. He's a national songwriter, visual artist, and activist. He also has a new book. It's a children's book. It's called The Boy Who Tried to Touch the Sun. Also with us, Dr. Treva Lindsay. She's a professor of African-American women's history at OSU, where she also specializes in hip-hop culture. And Josh Miller, promoter and co-founder and organizer of the 2x2 Hip-Hop Festival in Columbus. It is on July 28th this year. You can learn more about that. Go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll continue our conversation. What do you think about hip-hop culture? What do you think about the Pulitzer Prize for Music going to a hip-hop artist, Kendrick Lamar, a phenomenal song. We're going to hear a little bit from that, or we just did hear a little bit from that. Tell us what you think, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. That's a bit from Vada Azeem's 2016 song, Money Phone. We're talking about the cultural influence of hip-hop and rap music today with us. Still with us is Vada Azeem. He's a national songwriter, visual artist, and activist. He grew up in Columbus, is based in Columbus. He has a new book for children. It's entitled The Boy Who Tried to Touch the Sun. Also with us, professor of African-American women's history, with a specialty as well in hip-hop studies at Ohio State, Dr. Treva Lindsay. Thanks for joining us. And promoter, co-founder, and organizer of the 2x2 Hip-Hop Festival in Columbus, Josh Miller. This year, it's on the July 28th, and you can learn more about it and get tickets. Check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. A point that I think everybody's made so far is that this is a worldwide phenomenon. How is it different in its origin country? How do people view it differently than they do? I know that, like, we'll just take another parallel, which is, say, jazz or the blues, dealt with much differently in France and England in its day than it was in the United States, where we still had Jim Crow and segregation and everything else that like that and from that. How is it seen differently around the world?
Well, I think across the world, you see it taken up with different kinds of intentionality, I should say. I think that you see it becomes a voice for marginalized people in different contexts and different circumstances. It's not that people have the exact same circumstances that young kids in the Bronx in the 1970s right. did, but they can relate to feeling unheard, feeling unseen. You see it pop up a lot in places where there are particular kinds of conflicts happening, or a certain class of people is being marginalized or not respected in full. Their rights aren't being respected in full. And I think hip hop gets taken up in ways that's fairly different from these other ones, because hip hop does have a core in which there's a critique of systems. There's a critique of power. There's a critique of different kinds of institutional forces that show up in people's lives, and it still allows you to have fun and have joy. And I think that that balance in terms of a musical form, an art form, a cultural form, is something that's really powerful in terms of its ability to move almost anywhere and be viable for that community.
Yeah.
Right. I agree with her. I think no matter where you are, you know, financially, spiritually, emotionally, it doesn't matter. I think hip hop allows you to attach yourself to it because, you know, it's contagious. It's and I always say, if of course the genre has elements of, you know, struggle and overcoming things, just like Treva said, but that's because those things are still happening today, right? So of course those things are going to be expressed, just like anything's expressed through any type of art form, right? So but let's hypothetically say you know, people who are marginalized, you know, let's say everything gets better, let's say we all in a perfect world, we all are on the same level, right? Hip hop is still going to live in that space. You see what I'm saying? It's just going to be different topics and different things talked about. So I have a problem when people say, well, it needs to stop talking about this and that and that. Well, that's not the problem. The problem isn't hip hop. The problem is the things that are allowing these type of circumstances to happen. And that's why these things are being communicated. Because people are living that, people are talking about their experiences and their life. So if you want to do something about, you know, whatever, the violence or the negativity in the genre, then, you know, then let's do something about these communities. Let's do something about why people feel like they're not equal to other groups of people. You know what I mean? Let's focus on that if you really care about that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right. Let's hear from Janet and Bexley. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Janet, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
I can. Welcome.
Hi, Ann. I am 61 and a white woman, and probably not the person who might have experienced what I feel is a kind of life-changing experience in because of hip hop. I was in New York and I saw John Boogs and Lil Buck in a show at the Skirball Center there, and it was astonishing. They were inspiring. It was powerful. They used movement, poetry, music, and it was had about social issues. And the impact was just really almost shattering and beautiful. And so I feel like this is a really important conversation, because so many of us are far removed from the culture that these artists come from, and we don't need to be, and we shouldn't be, and we shouldn't be afraid of it. So that's my comment.
Thanks, Janet. I appreciate that. Anybody else? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Josh Miller, what about a festival? I mean, I've been to lots of music festivals. How does a hip hop festival differ or compare and contrast, or what is it like? What are you doing?
I mean, we're, you know, kind of in a nutshell, we're trying to show everybody the beauty of the hip hop culture. You know, that was kind of my thing was, you know, I found hip hop in high school. You know, I was in study hall and, you know, I had my friend Matt, and he was like, yo, man, you know, have you ever rapped before? And I was like, nope. And, you know, he knew I was into hip hop. And I went to his house one day, and he had me freestyle on the spot for the first time in my life. And I was super nervous, had no idea what I was doing, but I fell in love with it, you know? So, and then I got into producing music and got into writing graffiti and things like that. So my whole thing was exactly what she just said on the phone was, you know, the culture of hip hop has so many beautiful things and has so many positive things that it gives to the world, and you know, as a form of self-expression for everybody in all of the elements. We just want to show everybody how truly great and how incredible the experience is by being there and by seeing all of those elements.
Let's talk about the criticisms, the classic criticisms, the stereotype criticisms of misogyny and not just violence, but gratuitous violence. Where did that come from? I mean, and is it fair or is it ever fair? Treva Lindsay?
Sure. In certain ways, it's a complicated question in that, you know, I feel like we have this discussion around hip hop singularly, which is fascinating to me, considering the misogyny present in our culture writ large, the violence present in our culture writ large.
Certainly and doesn't have a corner on the market.
No,
if it doesn't,
I think that, you know, there are artists who say, you know, hip hop holds a mirror up to American society and says, okay, this is how we think about women. These are the words we use to describe women. It's not just in hip hop that I hear that. You can hear it in a number of spaces, even spaces we consider sacred, that you can hear sexism and misogyny being perpetuated, homophobia being perpetuated. I think I feel a responsibility to critique hip hop around it because it's a culture I love and a culture I grew up in. That's why I take it to task. But I think we have to be honest about that reflection that's coming back. So even the gratuitous violence, in a moment where we're literally yelling Black Lives Matter, we're saying, say her name. You have a girl being dragged across the floor by the cops in Alabama at a Waffle House. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to say the gratuitous violence is present in hip hop, but it's present because gratuitous violence is the American way. Mm. We have mass school shootings almost every day. Some form of a school shooting, some form of mass shooting every day, right, that happens. You have Black trans women that are killed at a rate so that their life expectancy is 35 years old. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to talk about what gratuitous violence means, we all have to be held accountable and talk about that and then look at a genre that's attempting to say, this is the violence we see. This is the violence we rap about, and say, hey, we shouldn't be engaged in this kind of violence. We have to find a different way to engage with each other. And that's important, too. So it's not above critique, but it can't be the sole source or the sole site at which we're willing to make that and not be self-reflexive. It's the epitome of hypocrisy to me in that way.
Yeah.
Right, right. And I'll be wrong to say that or not wrong to say, but I'll be upset if I don't say this. Like we talked about the origin of how the genre was even created. First of all, we're in a capitalist society. Since day one, since we're born, we're in competition with each other. Our grading system, the corporate war, everything that we're taught from a very young age is you have to be better than the next person, right? So, growing up in that environment. Or in a country like that, and then growing up in a country where you're poor and you don't have anything and you have to try to be better than the next person, out of that hopelessness, hip hop was created. And you know, not to you know, act like, you know, my community or my culture or my people are, like, you know, better than anyone else, but historically, African Americans specifically, or not African Americans, just Africans in general, historically in everything, we've always taken something very tragic and created something peaceful out of it. Historically, it's always happened. So that's what we did with hip hop, and then hip hop started to turn and go different places, not because we weren't changing, but because the country and what we were living in didn't change. You know, something else was thrown at us. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you have to talk about the violence, just like she said. I always talk about it because, you know, when I was younger, I used to say the B word all the time. I used to call girls that because it was in the music and it was, you know what I mean? But at some point
it was normalized.
It was normal. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but are you going to be upset if someone doesn't grow from that? Like, that we all have to grow together from that. You see what I'm saying? On an equal scale, you know, Hollywood movies and everything else, we all are portraying violence and misogyny and all of that. So let's critique everybody on the same scale. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Putting together a festival, how does that, those stereotypes, and those, I hate to use calling those stereotypes. I prefer to think of them as those stereotyped critiques, I mean, of the genre. They're stereotyping it. But how does that play into how you're booking people for these festivals? And you want to not be afraid to put it out there, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think for us, you know, I think it also kind of comes down to, again, you know, it's putting that mirror up. So, I've been on campus many a times on High Street passing out flyers to people for shows and saying, hey, you know, and my line is, you know, hey, do you like hip hop music? We got a show coming up, you know, and it's incredible how many people that will be wearing a Wu-Tang shirt or something like that will say no to that question. And I'll be like, well, what are you doing wearing this shirt? Or you know what I mean? What are uh-huh. you doing walking out of the club with that? You know, and the crazy thing with it is, you know, everybody has this stereotype of what label they want to put on hip hop of. Automatically, it's promotes violence and misogyny and all those things. But it also depends on who you're listening to. You know, same thing. You know, when you talked about hip hop being all over the world now. You know, yeah. Underground hip hop and a lot of like the more indie kind of hip hop labels do incredibly well overseas in Europe and things like that. So, and the b-boy scene and b-girl scene is. Massive overseas. So I think the really big thing is that, you know, people find that expression and that thing that they can connect to and relate to within the hip hop culture. And at the end of the day, they're just expressing themselves. So when it comes to booking and trying to organize a festival that shows a well-balanced lineup of performers and things like that, you know, we always think about that. You know, it's still, you know, somebody who's getting on stage, expressing themselves, writing about the life that they've been through, the community they were raised in, and the world they see now. So, you know, we always try to make sure, you know, people will ask us if it's a family event. Are you guys, you know, do we have to edit ourselves? Do we have to have clean versions of our songs? And we tell them no. You know, your music is your music. So, you know, we take it at the same thing of being able to grow from those things. You know, I asked my son this morning when I was walking him to school, you know, I was like, you know, man, I'm going on the radio today and I'm going to be talking about hip hop and the impact it has on society. I was like, how has hip hop, you know, impacted you? And he was like, it's fun. You know, he's like, I get to dance to, you know what I mean? Eric B and Rakim and all this stuff. So, you know, I love it. And when I asked him about, you know, music and things like that, when it comes to the violence and stuff, he's like, well, I usually don't listen to a lot of that stuff, Dad. You know what I mean? I listen to old school stuff. You know what I mean? So I think it's really just kind of depends on, you know, what CD you put in the car at the time, and really how you're going to grow from it, no matter what the topic is, no matter what the subject matter is.
We need to take a quick break, but I do want to talk about Childish Gambino's latest "This Is America" because it sort of brings all of this together in an incredible mosaic of. Expression and sound and so many things that I want to talk about. Maybe we can listen to that again when we come back, too. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the influence of hip-hop on American culture and world culture now. My guest, you just heard from Josh Miller. He's a promoter and co-founder and organizer of the 2x2 Hip-Hop Festival in Columbus. It's on July 28th this year. So for more information on that, you can check out the link at our website at wosu.org/allsides. Also with us, Professor Treva Lindsay. She teaches African American women's history at OSU, as well as the history of the hip hop culture, and Vada Azim. He's a national songwriter. He's a visual artist and activist. He grew up here. He's based here, and he is the author of a new children's book. It's titled "The Boy Who Tried to Touch the Sun." We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Slipping up. Look what I'm whipping up. This is America. got you slipping up. Look how I'm living up. Police be tripping up.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. That is rapper Childish Gambino's latest hit single, This Is America. It was revealed on Saturday Night Live this past weekend, and it's a pretty amazing just display of so many parts of the art form. And yeah, I've watched it so many times now because every time I watch it, it's like a good book. You get something different out of it. But he does pretty much deal with head on the violence and the entertainment of Black America. The piece of entertainment that comes from it, and then this other piece of violence, and he does it in so many different ways. It's just an amazing mosaic. I wondered what you guys thought of it. It seems like a turning point kind of a piece. So still with us, Dr. Tuva Lindsay, professor of African American women's history at Ohio State, also specializes in hip hop culture, and Josh Miller, promoter and co-founder of an organizer of 2x2 Hip Hop Festival in Columbus, and Vada Azim, a national songwriter, visual artist, and activist, and children's author. His new book is entitled The Boy Who Tried to Touch the Sun. So tell me, Treva Lindsay, what you make of it, and what did you think of it the first time you saw it? Because I imagine you've watched it many times since.
I have watched it many times since. It's such a beautiful moment right now in kind of art and production and popular culture around hip hop. So I actually watched it in conjunction with Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer. And so, which I think is also incredibly groundbreaking, particularly around issues of gender and sexuality and race and being a Black woman in America. And so I kind of watched them in conjunction with one another. And I was one of the few people I think that was up in the middle of the night when the video was released, because I feel like so many of the responses came later in the day or the next day, and I was actually kind of up when it dropped, and I was like, oh, what is this? Uh-huh. And immediately I was struck by the movement. My background is in dance, so I was really struck by the movement initially.
Right off the bat.
Right off the bat, the jerky, the ecstatic. I was getting Fela Kuti and the dressing, also Al Green, and then this moment that's just disrupted by gun violence, the care with which the gun is handled and the carelessness with which life that's just been lost was handled. I mean, it's placed in this, the gun is placed in this nice little kind of red rag and taken off. And then the person's just dragged out of the scene. And it took me about two or three times before I actually looked in the background to see what was happening. And I think that on one hand, I think there's a read of it that says we're distracted by all the pretty shiny things and all of this chaos is breaking out in the back. But I also think another important read of that is that both of these things happen simultaneously, that even in these times of chaos, we still need joy and all of this, that there are these moments of powerful disruption and violence and all of that. But we keep pushing forward. We keep sustaining. But we have to think about that conundrum, that paradox of being Black in America in that way, that's vacillating between this joy, this ecstasy, this celebration, this violence, this harm, this impending sense of death that's always just right there, the white horse riding in the background that seems to be an ominous kind of death bringing
with
death
someone
moving.
Garbed in all black,
all
and
black.
Shrouded in black, actually.
And
I
you're
think.
Just trying to process, like, that's happening while these kids and Donald are dancing. And so this sense of impending death is just right there. You can be totally doing your own thing, and it's right there. It's one misplaced phone call away from to the cops about you not waving at a neighbor. It is one phone call away waiting at a Starbucks for a friend that these things can happen. And I think in a moment like this, it's so important to have a piece of art that reckons with that and forces us to have these kinds of conversations about that kind of terror and also that kind of joy and ecstasy simultaneously existing.
Yeah. Vada?
Yeah, I mean, I can't follow Treva after that question. I think she nailed everything and all the visuals. But when I saw it, the first thing I said was, I mean, first of all, it's an amazing record. I mean, it's just an amazing mm-hmm. song. That take the video away.
Yeah,
like, I just
right.
love the
it's
song.
It's wonderful to listen to.
And, and so it was that.
So
it's
rich.
Just so many layers.
So
rich. And the visual is just so many layers. So,
yeah.
I watched it myself just over and over again before I seen any of the what anyone else saw, and I think that's what the artist wants you to do. It's beautiful. It sums up hip hop. That video sums up hip hop to me.
I think the busyness of it and busyness, I don't mean in a pejorative way, but just the busyness of it. There's so many things happening at the same time. And I kind of got a little bit of that aspect, not a little bit, a lot of it from Money Phone, your song. Mm-hmm. There's this thing happening here and now right in front of my face. And, you know, you're talking about I've got money on my phone and there's all of this. But in the background, there's all these people doing business. There's this huge machine out there happening. And I thought you kind of you captured some of that multidimensional experience of living in the United States and being where you're at. And it's right. not one dimensional. It is so complicated. Of course it's complicated.
Right,
isn't
right.
it all?
Right, right, right. And real quick, when I released the record, that the whole project, it's called 20s Go for Knicks. And it dives into, you know, just a lot of my upbringing and the ways I was brought up. You know, I was poor and, you know, grew up in rough neighborhoods and stuff like that. And it displays that on that project. And then I, you know, then I released a children's book not too long after that. Mm-hmm. Right. And a Columbus police officer commented on one of my pictures and he said, no, thanks. I won't be reading your book to my kid after I listen to the project that you just put out. And I reached out to him and I said, well, I would love to have a conversation with you. And he shied away from it. And it's like, I'm glad that he had that reaction because I wanted to speak to him. And just like you said, it's a machine behind this hip hop stuff. But nobody gets mad at Viacom for their role in it. No one gets mad at all these big corporations for their role in it. They always blame the actual artist. Mm. And like I said earlier, I want to clear this up. When I was a kid, I did used to say words and stuff I shouldn't have said. But guess what later taught me to not say those words? The same genre that taught me to say them. Hip hop. I learned it from a different artist. Like Josh said, a different artist started to appease me and I started to say, oh no, okay, this is wrong. You shouldn't look at females in this light. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you talked about it when we first started, talking about that track, how it was kind of like a good book, how, you know, you wanted to keep going over and over.
Yeah.
But at the same time with that song, it's also, it's kind of a sting because it has that mirror that really shows up and shows not only really what hip hop is, but what this country is, you know, and how our society is
right.
these days. So, you know, that was a big thing for me is I haven't read any of the write-ups on them or the articles, and I just kept watching it over and over again.
Well, if all I could do is just sit around and listen to music.
That would be...
Right. I actually did it to prepare. I don't usually go to those things. And,
I mean, I do think it's a point of consideration to say, I thought about this as I watched it for like the ninth time, my own kind of willingness to watch black people be shot over and over again.
Yeah.
Because each time you watch the video, you have to re-encounter that violence. And
right.
we frequently re-encounter it, whether it's a video that goes viral on social media of some kind of physical assault or
right.
some kind of violent interaction. And so I also wanted to, I think there's something really smart about holding that up, our comfort or our desensitization around watching black death and watching gun death, like, oh, another shooting at a school, it just passes
right.
on a blip, or oh, they shot up a church, that's terrible, but you know, it's what happens and the normalcy of it. And so I had to realize every time I watched that, I think there were 10 choir members and the one guy who shot in the beginning, so I was watching 11 black people die over and over and over mm-hmm. and over again. And I think Donald Glover is also putting a question, Childish Gambino is putting a question out there about our own comfort with watching that and
right.
our frequency and willingness to reengage mm-hmm.
and,
black
and,
death
and, practitioners
spectacle.
And keep it moving because that's what happens in the video. After every time someone gets murdered, he keeps it moving.
Yes.
And it's constant. It's like, oh, okay. Like it's nothing.
Yes.
Right.
Until the end. When he's running through that dark tunnel and it looks like white people chasing him and it's scary and
very Clockwork Orange.
Yes, very the manic. He's so expressive as an actor. His facial expressions. Well, he's just amazing. But when he's running through that tunnel, they're chasing him. It's scary. And you are able to maybe slightly, I don't know if you can ever, you know, feel the fear, but it's tangible.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's an amazing artist. I mean, when he first came out, I will admit, I wasn't too fond of him. Like when he came out as a because you know he was an actor and
yeah,
all that
producer,
first, but
yeah.
When he came out as a rapper, I wasn't too fond of him. And I thought he was like, oh man, this guy is kind of like
he just wants to get in everything.
He's like corny, like you know what I mean. Like that's why I looked at him as, and now I realize that. It's so silly that we look at people like that.
Well, now
he's my favorite.
Up an interesting aspect that I discovered, didn't know about until I was reading about it and preparing for this, is there isn't the camaraderie that there could be in the hip-hop community, particularly in the music part of it. What do you make of that? I mean, because it's interesting when you tell the story about sort of the origins and mm-hmm. the peacemaking aspect of it mm-hmm. is one thing. But on the flip side, there's been a lot of people at odds with each other in the genre as well.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm so happy at my, you know, the people that are part of my culture and my community, because like I said, we took something and everyone is under that. We're under competition with each other. Everybody is. And we took that and we're still in competition with each other. I'm still going to prove that I'm a better B-boyer than you. I'm going to prove that I'm a better MC than you. And I'm going to prove that I can rock a party way better than you can. But are we physically harming each other doing it? No, we're not. It's still good competition. And at the end of the day, even back then, you know, crews, when they were battling each other, it was respect. It was still respect there. And we made that out of nothing, like literally nothing. We made it out of nothing. And that in itself should, like, you know.
No apologies.
Exactly.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know.
Right.
I think competition exists. I mean, some of this is, as you mentioned earlier, around capitalism. Capitalism produces conflict and competition in hyper ways. But there's also an element of hip hop that is about the challenge. This exists throughout African-American vernacular and folk culture, that you have the challenge. And there are all kinds of ways that this shows up, this kind of play that happens. Now, there is an extension when that play goes to somewhere else that we absolutely have to address. But we still have to think about that in the broader context in which it happens. But I also want to talk about the intimacy of hip hop that exists between. There are crews. There are not a lot of other genres that have crews in the way that hip hop has crews, that you have Young Thug and Future have each other tattooed on themselves. Like, that's a dynamic. And particularly for two men who don't identify as queer, to have that kind of intimacy mm-hmm. among each other, to be able to love on people publicly and show that kind of love and show up in these ways, to have 8 people on a song, right? There are very few artists and genres that do create space for that, to have a B-boy crew. You do this, you got this down, you lock this down. I'm doing graph work. You do this part. I'm going to hit this down here because I'm really steady with this, but I do big installations better. There is a collectivity and an intimacy that's in hip hop that I don't think is present in a lot of other genres. And I don't think there's a lot of credit given to that. And that is deeply rooted in its origins of bringing together
different gangs.
It couldn't
have happened
without
a crew atmosphere.
No,
right?
It is about collaborative yeah, work, right. Collective work. The community is present, which again reaches back into a lot of how marginalized groups survive is through finding community and creating community. And then it becomes a value that can be celebrated by anyone, that we're stronger together than we are thinking about this individually, which is very anti-capitalistic in certain other ways.
Mm-hmm. Professor Treva Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Treva Lindsay is a professor of African-American women's history at Ohio State. She also specializes in the hip-hop culture. Also, Vada Azeem, national songwriter, visual artist, and activist. Oh, by the way, I want to mention your book, Treva Lindsay's book, Colored No More, Reinventing Black Womanhood in Washington, D.C. Sorry about missing that. Vada Azeem, as I said, national songwriter, visual artist, and activist based in Columbus. His new book for children, The Boy Who Tried to Touch the Sun. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Josh Miller, promoter and co-founder and organizer of the 2x2 Hip Hop Festival in Columbus. That's coming up on July 28th. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You can learn more about that. We'll have a link on our website at WOSU.org. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.